This is the intro of our test podcast.
Hello there, I'm Anna and this is Feed Dive, Podigy's podcast about, well, all things podcasting. For the first time, we're bringing you the show in English. And since it's our debut episode addressed at English-speaking listeners, fans of Podigy and podcasting aficionados in Europe and beyond, we thought it would be polite to dedicate this one to the history and the people behind Podigy, a Berlin-based podcast hosting company launched in 2013 as a side project by two colleagues, Mateusz Sujka, also called Mati, and Ben Zimmer. Today, 7 years later, Podigy is the largest podcast tech company in Germany and one of the biggest podcasting players in Europe. But how has it all started? What contributed to the Podigy success? What were the challenges and the breakthrough moments? How is the COVID-19 pandemic impacting podcasting and the company today? To get some answers for these and a few more of my questions, I invited Mati, the Podigy CEO and co-founder, as well as Jürgen Kraus, head of content at Podigy. So I think let's dive into it. Hi, Mati. Hi, Jürgen. It's great to finally talk to you.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Welcome to this English version of the Feed Dive podcast. Are you excited to be switching from German into English for a moment, or rather petrified?
I feel it's an important step. The message we've been sending so far in our German podcast, I think it deserves actually to get out a little bit. So some more people, it makes me feel excited to reach maybe other people that we used to reach with the other one.
Yeah, it's really interesting because podcasting is such a global phenomena now, and there are no real boundaries to podcasting. And yet we focus usually on our small German market. So I guess it's really interesting for us to open our mind a bit and see what's beyond the German borders.
We are on a mission today to talk about the story and the people behind Podigy and to introduce the company and the people to the wider audience, so to say. And I need to say at the beginning that when I thought about 2013, when the, maybe not company, as we will shortly probably find out, but the project, so to say, was launched. And when I thought about myself in 2013, I'm pretty sure I didn't know back then what podcasting was and podcasts were. And whether I was alone in my lack of experience and knowledge, I will ask you guys in a minute. But when we think about podcasting now, as you said, I mean, it's massive. I'm not sure whether I live in a kind of a podcasting bubble. I hope not. But it seems like everyone has a podcast these days. I mean, including the former First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, Germany's Chancellor, Angela Merkel. We have Robbie Williams with his family, just to name a few. We're living in an era of Spotify exclusivity podcast partnerships, like the recent deal made by Joe Rogan, the creator of the, well, pioneering, maybe we can say that, the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. Basically, right now it takes, what, less than 5 minutes to get your podcast out there in the world? And also thanks to Podigy, providing hosting and statistics and advertising for audio shows. How was podcasting doing in 2013? Was I really alone back then and not being sure what podcasts were?
In 2013, I think you're right that most people that listen to podcasts these days didn't know what a podcast is. That's true. Like if you look at the numbers 7 years ago, there was podcasting. Podcast is actually pretty old. A lot of people talk about like what's going on these days in podcasting, but podcasting is like, let's say, internet in digital years. It's like stone age old, like 2005 or 2006. But yeah, 2013, it was rather uncommon to find other people listening to podcasts. I used to be a podcast listener in 2013 already. So whenever I would meet someone like would listen to podcast, like any podcast, let's say, that would be already like a massive surprise. And people, you know, you would start talking with the people. Like, just imagine like any, let's say, niche hobby you might have. It's similar. It used to be like this, right? Like, if you think about it, how is it today? It's like you say, like a lot of people produce podcasts. I think there's still not that many, but happily, we see a lot of people starting to produce podcasts, but there's actually a ton of people listening. And it's something that has become very, very common and very normal. Back in the day, you would say, oh, I read this article, or I read this thing, And these days you often hear like, oh, I listened to this podcast and they were talking about this topic, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, it's changed a little bit since 2013.
You mentioned that you were already listening to some podcasts back then. Do you remember any titles, any shows?
Oh, that's actually a very interesting question, because my very first podcast was actually in Spanish. In 2013, I was already living again, let's say, in Germany. But before that, I lived for a few years in Spain. And my experience, like my first experience with podcasting, was a gaming podcast that was produced by a, let's say, yeah, PC game magazine. Back in the day, I used to play a lot of video games, and that was something, yeah, of my interest, let's say. And that's why I started listening to this podcast. Funnily, what I always remember is this experience was how listening to a podcast was back then, like 2013, or like before even 2013 was already a bit, there was a more modern ways of listening to podcasts, but like in 2010, maybe even before that, you know, you would have to download MP3 files and put them on some iPod, or I used to have like some random MP3 player, maybe later on a mobile phone, which was like not a smartphone yet. So it was pretty wild. Listening to podcasts was actually more a dedicated hobby. You had to really want to listen to podcasts. Like whenever I hear these days that people say, oh, I don't know how to listen to a podcast yet, I think like, oh, you should have seen like how it used to be like 10 years ago.
Jürgen, how was it with you and podcasting 7 years ago?
2013 seems like a lifetime ago. For me, it's 3 or 4 jobs ago. But I just realized how close Maddie and I already were, although we didn't know each other. I was working as a video game editor from 2006 to 2012, around that. And we started a podcast from our magazine, and we talked about video games in a podcast, like starting 2009 or so. So we totally could have met back then. So that I just came to realize that.
If only I have lived in the right country by then.
Yeah, there was this. But as I already said, podcasting for me is like there are no real boundaries except the language barrier.
And you remember, Jürgen, what kind of podcasts you were listening to back then?
The first podcast I started listening to was called Bits und So, which still exists today. It's a German tech podcast, so real nerdy stuff. But as I already said, I worked in kind of a nerdy environment. The podcasting was a thing back then, especially in 2013.
We're talking about this 2013, and this is also when the idea for Podigy came to life. But how was that with you and Ben in 2013? I hinted in the intro that you were colleagues back then, but it's one thing to be colleagues at a certain workplace and a completely different thing, I think, to be starting a business together.
We are both software engineers, like that's our background. I mean, I am not anymore. I'm more like the business guy these days. Ben, fortunately, he of course has a bit more of a business responsibility too, but he's still closer to the tech. But in 2013, we were both working as consultants at a Berlin-based company. So at this company, we would build content management system that was sold to rather big companies and big projects. And around those projects, there was few people working in different teams, basically making it happen. It was like basically an IT project. So we have a fairly tech background, but we realized when talking to each other that we, in first place, we were interested in cloud software and development of online products. And that's how we got started. But very soon at the beginning, we realized this thing that I told you about. Ben used to listen to podcasts. I was a podcast listener. So that was like immediately, oh, this is something really cool. And then we started talking, and some of these ideas just happened, you know, and soon we were talking about, hey, wouldn't it be nice to have a solution for podcasters? Before that, we actually had another one, like actually podcast wasn't like the very first one, but making any product in the podcast space was like a really immediate thing to notice, like this is something that we want to do, because we started talking to some people, we looked around a little bit, and we saw, okay, there's not too many solutions there to create a podcast. A lot of people were complaining, especially in Germany, but in general in Europe, we noticed there wasn't any good hosting solution. So this is something that we realized like after only a few times talking to each other. And we saw, oh, there is actually a huge opportunity. And we saw like, okay, we love to listen to podcasts. We were not producers, but at the same time, we felt like, okay, podcasting is something that we care about. and we saw that the products on the market weren't that good yet, we thought, yeah, we can do better. We can build something that people will use and will like.
Would you say you were just like solution-driven and kind of need-driven with this idea? Because you said that before you actually had a different idea for a business, but you decided to go into podcasting.
I think that's key to, you know, getting actually something done or working. You cannot just think in one dimension, which would be, oh, I love podcasting. I have to do something about podcasting. I mean, you can do that, and a lot of people maybe start and they're lucky enough to find like just this passion leads them somewhere. But usually if you only think about something in one dimension, it would lead you to just like a very dedicated hobby, let's say. What we actually very soon realize is like we think about the product, we think about the solution, we think about the problem. You need to solve some problem if you want to build a business around it. Otherwise, why would people pay you money for anything? But this is something that we actually discuss very often at the beginning. And we noticed, okay, it was still a bet because we felt like, yeah, there's not too many people yet producing podcasts, listening to podcasts. It's a niche market. But at the same time, because it's a niche market, there is still a lot of problems to solve. So it was kind of a bet that paid out later because, as you said, it was in the beginning, it was just a project, like a really side project. And 1 year later, Serial would come out in the US and then we saw like, oh, wow, it might actually work.
You mentioned that side project reality. How was that on the execution? Because side project, that usually means that you don't have the entire time to dedicate yourself to this, right? How did you execute on the idea back then?
It comes down to, we had this idea, we decided what is the next thing we want to build. So we started very soon to have some form of like project organization, but we were still working like full time on our main job. And we had to kind of, yeah, work after the daily job on weekends, whenever there was a bank holiday, maybe some instead of going on vacation, I don't know. There was a lot of grinding for few months, yeah.
Sounds like no work-life balance, just pushing, pushing, pushing.
It was a bit, I mean, it wasn't that bad because it's, in the end, it was something that we were really passionate about. So it was more, yeah, a very dedicated hobby in the very beginning, but we actually thought like it was worth investing the time, spending maybe some weekends working on it because first it was a lot of fun. But at the same time, yeah, there was this, you know, we had this kind of seed of hope that someday it would become a business, really, and a company.
Did you have like a dedicated space where you and Ben would sit and brainstorm and make things happen? Or was kind of random or like this garage kind of startup vibe?
No, the garage came very late to the party, actually. You know, 2020 and this entire COVID situation pushed us a little bit into more remote working, everyone. But we actually started like this because, yes, we would work at the same company, but if you've been to Berlin, you know how big the city is. So Ben and I were actually living like 1.5 hours from each other, even though we both lived in Berlin officially. So after work, you would just rather go home and then, you know, be online, and we would have software tools to brainstorm, or we would just have some calls. I think Trello was one tool that I still feel like it brought us very far. Being like very simple, like these days Trello is a bit more advanced, but when we started using it, I think they just had started. So there was not a lot to do. Like you could just create maybe some, you know, some stories and add some comments, not much more. But that worked fine. That's how we used to brainstorm. And it was a lot of chatting and brainstorming.
And how did the idea for the Podigy's name come about? Was there any story behind that?
It's actually pretty simple once you know how to read it. We had a different name before and it was so bad that we knew we had to change it.
What was the bad name then?
Yeah, I know. You would, and at some point we promised each other that we would never tell this name anyone again.
So embarrassing.
It's something that we are reserving for when we retire.
I need to note it down in the calendar when you're retired to ask you that.
No, but really, yeah,
I don't even know it yet.
Oh no, then we need to come together and then ask him when he retires.
I think we should add it to our contracts that no one is allowed in LA. So now the name of Podigy is actually relatively easy. I mean, it has something to do with podcast, as you might have noticed, but just imagine the double E was a Y and that maybe the second letter is missing. Prodigy,
exactly. Yeah,
that's kind of what we used as a base for the name. it's a double E because we were a little bit afraid that at some point someone might sue us for having a very similar name to, you know, the band Prodigy. So that's why the double E. Pod, because of podcasting, of course. And why Prodigy? Because, you know, if you take the English meaning of prodigy, that's kind of something that, I know, very pretentious, but at the same time we thought like, yeah, we would like to be something.
Prodigy child.
Yeah, something like that. At least being impactful in some way.
Do you think you're on the way to be?
Yeah, what we've been through, especially the last couple of years, it's been quite a ride, and we're still not finished. What I see is definitely what we have, like, let's say, achieved now in terms of the company and the people that we have. Is actually even probably more than we would wish for in the beginning. But of course, the more you dedicate, you know, your time and at some point actually your professional life and actually familiar life as well, it is what it is. You start realizing then, yeah, the more you believe it yourself, the more you see like it can become even bigger and better and whatnot. But if I had to look back from where we are right now to, let's say, 2013, I think, yeah, we succeeded so far. I'm not saying we are finished or we can, you know, just celebrate, but there's more to come.
Who can we call a Podi geek? I found that on the Podigy website. Now, who is that person?
That is very well hidden on the website. I started to use that internally for describing ourselves because that's like the kind of person that works at Podigy. You have to be a bit of a geek for the medium. The Podigy started with a lot of tech guys, and they were, of course, a lot of geeks for the tech behind the medium. So I thought that that would be a good term to describe ourselves, to say we do this not because it's a business, but because it's something we love to do and we really want to get into it.
Okay, makes sense. When we come back to the beginnings of this project, Podigy as a side project, what were the mission and the vision that you set for this project at the very beginning? Stages.
One of the first visions was that podcasting actually is a very, let's say, valid medium. Back then, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't that easy to understand. And actually, the vision was more like, back to this Podi geek, actually, we wanted to be the geeks, so you don't have to be. That would be like a claim, you know, like we would take care of the technical stuff so that other people do not have to. And there's different reasons why you don't want to do that. I mean, a lot of people can, you know, it's not like there isn't enough people who can do technical stuff and understand how to install servers and maybe, or I don't know, a WordPress installation. Maybe that's what used to be the case back then. Usually still these days, there's a lot of people who do that. But at the same time, there's even more people who say, I either don't have the skills, I don't want to have them, I don't need them. I work in a different business, so I don't have the time, or I just don't have the time to do it, even though I could. So that's kind of like the vision mission was like making podcasting so easy so that even people who are not very technical or don't have this huge technical knowledge could have a chance to, you know, get their voice out and reach a lot of people.
You started pitching this idea and sharing this idea. You remember some reactions, what you had about your business to be from others?
We kind of got two different reactions from people, you know, positive ones and not so positive, let's say. And actually both were pretty good to have because the positive ones gave us, you know, the necessary, let's say, push to see like people are interested in what we're doing and actually like the idea. And at the same time, the people who would say like, no, I don't see this happening as a business, or I don't know why people would pay for this. Yeah, I mean, you can do this cheaper yourself, stuff like that. That would actually make us challenge our assumptions because we would think like maybe some people are right. Maybe what we are trying to do is not what the people need, and or maybe it's too expensive or maybe it's not. But, you know, lots of questions. Both were equally necessary. And if you only get like positive feedback, maybe it's not that helpful in terms of knowing what could not be ideal. I think even if you get only negative feedback when you pitch the idea, of course you have to change your assumptions. But at some point, maybe you have to think also, do I believe that this is the right vision? Because like, it wouldn't be the first time that someone comes with a crazy idea and actually succeeds. So I would not say just listen to, you know, reactions. Have your own kind of vision as well. There's not an easy answer to this question. I think it's very important, definitely, especially in the next phase, it's very important to get reactions once you have something, once you build something. Like, let's say this MVP, the minimum viable product that you have, like something that you can show someone, then it's crucial to get opinions.
Tell me, are you this kind of a person that if you were getting only positive reviews, you would just also become suspicious?
I don't know, because that then didn't happen. that wasn't the case. I mean, if I start asking lots of people I know maybe, and they all say like, yes, this is a great idea, I would probably get suspicious and say, yeah, maybe they just don't want to talk about it, or they think it's a very bad idea, but they just don't want to hurt my feelings. I don't know. But I have a lot of, I think I know a lot of people who are not like that. So I think most people would give me a solid feedback, even if it was something I would like to hear.
You started saying about the value of some negative or maybe some, constructive criticism, comments. They were very important when you actually have something built already. So is that the better phase that you're trying to hint here? How this came about and how important the comments were actually in that stage?
So when we decided that we wanted to build something and that it would be a podcast hosting service, we started first working on it. It took us a few months. So actually the beta phase started in 2014, I think around March or April maybe. And that phase was long-ish, but not too long, I think a few months. During that time, obviously, we would reach out to even more people, because once you actually have something that you can show, you know, then you just do that. And we would invite people. It was still invite only. Funnily, we found it easier to find people for the beta phase than when we started actually with the, you know, final version, because I believe at least at that point that there was a lot of people just interested in trying out, you know, new stuff and whatnot, but maybe weren't the perfect buyers yet for our product. So yeah, during the beta phase, of course, we had lots and lots of tweaking of feedback that we would get. Like people, once they actually start using something, that's when you get the valuable feedback. And yeah, so we would just pick up the stuff as it would come in, fix it, improve it, and go for the next thing. And basically, it's the same as it is even these days. Like it's about getting feedback, iterating, improving, and waiting for the next round.
Did you have some goals and the time frames back then?
We had a lot of, I would say, ideas. During the phase when we considered Podigy more as a project, we did not have yet something like a business plan or maybe time frame or very specific, let's say, time-based goals. In the very beginning, we would just really focus on the product a lot, like really trying to prove it and build features and build new stuff, get feedback. And the, let's say, more business side of things, that was something that started maybe 3 years later. There was like a very long phase where we would actually see it still as a side project, not like a business. Funnily, we kind of, from the very beginning, like once we left the beta phase, we already charged for the service, because that's something that happens to a lot of like side projects, that they never become a service where you can actually pay or something. This is just like, you know, this dedicated hobby again. But we, once we left the beta phase, we were convinced that the next step is to actually, you know, put in a payment system in place. So people, once we are out of the beta phase, of course, they have to pay for it. It took us a little long to realize that this is really a business, but we started like acting as one already like in 2014, I guess.
And what would you say was the moment when you actually started thinking that, okay, this Podigy project can become a business? Was there any breakthrough moment when you started thinking about this in a more professional way?
Breakthrough moment is when you realize that this can actually be a business, can bring enough money so that you can even think about, like, because that's what happened to us. Since we saw it in the beginning as a side project, we would actually accept that it's not bringing lots of money in the beginning. That is something that we actually very naively thought, like, if you have the perfect product, then everything else is going to happen just magically, which is not the case. So yes, you have to build a strong product, but then you need a lot of more stuff. You need to build like a business around this product. You have to promote your product to new people, find new customers, make everything run smoothly. The good thing is we put a lot of effort into building a good product, but at the same time, it took us a while to realize, okay, if this is going to be a business, we are going to need a lot more stuff. But when we saw that we actually are getting more and more customers, and that was actually the first time we thought about it was like 2016, 2017. At that time, by the end of 2016, we had the very first German podcast label joining us, and they started hosting with us. And that was like this very first moment where we saw, like, oh, if this, let's say, professional company that is building a business based on podcasting, if they are trusting us, it might actually be possible to build a business in the future. But it was still a little bit of too early to decide like anything, like, oh, we just quit our jobs at that point. 1 year later, it was a whole different story, because that's when, let's say, the podcast booming started in Germany. And then we got lots of very interesting new customers. We started talking to a lot of people who at that moment were thinking about starting podcasting. So that was the moment when we saw, okay, this is real. This is soon going to be like really full-time job for us. And so we decided to, yeah, just go and follow that dream.
Can you actually tell us a little bit more about that boom? Podcasting boom in Germany, especially I think here about our English-speaking listeners, someone who might just not be too familiarized with the podcasting situation in Germany back then. Were there any like big podcasting news, big names coming on the market, or how did that boom really look like?
In Germany, it was especially the news media, newspapers, digital news outlets, some media companies who started the podcast boom. Like before that, of course, there was plenty of podcasts, big and small. But in 2017, it was when especially one big newspaper that is Zeit Online, they started their podcast production. They created a team, a dedicated team for it. They hired one of the best podcast producers in Germany, Maria Lorenz, and they kind of invested a lot into podcasting. And they're still one of the biggest, let's say, podcast publishers in Germany these days. And they actually joined from the very beginning. They started hosting with Podigy and outsourcing, let's say, a lot of this stuff to us. That was like the very, very big customer. And they actually showed to lots of other companies that it was possible building a business around podcasting. And that's something that we kind of took with us. And of course, when they joined, they had lots of feature requests and wishes. So we had a lot of work in the beginning, but once we had them and we saw that others are very interested in our service, that's when it was like 100% clear that this is what we need to follow. And this is actually the time, 2017, we reached out to first time to some external people, let's say, to help us. And Jürgen is actually, I think, the very first one of all of the people. Like, he later joined the company properly as an employee, but like in 2017, I think it was just you, Jürgen, right?
Yeah, that was the first time you hired me. What's special about the situation in Germany, I'm feeling, is that we have a very huge community of indie podcasters and hobby producers. They're not just podcasting, they're also developing software around podcasting and providing solutions from the community for the community. And actually, that was when we came in touch with each other. So that's where we met, actually. That's why I thought from the beginning that Podigy is a really interesting company, because they really focused on becoming part of this community and really listened to what the community was doing and what they wanted and what their challenges were. And I, as part of this community, noticed that and I thought, hey, Podigy is really, actually really interesting. And then I'm not sure when, late in 2017 or so, you asked around looking for some freelance writer. And that's where I raised my hand and we've been working together ever since.
Marty, you mentioned that before Podigy became a company and went fully professional, there was plenty of stuff to sort out. Did you know how to sort all of this stuff? Tax issues, the Germany well-known Finanzamt, and all of the other issues that are, you know, technicalities of the law and tax here in Germany. How did that go for you?
We're still on the market, so I guess it didn't go that bad. No, it was a lot of new stuff. It doesn't matter where you, what you want to look at, like taxes, legal stuff, contracts, hiring people, first employee, working with freelancers, planning your business, setting goals. The list is so long, I could probably go for hours. Just the stuff that you normally don't do, like for a living, or you just do one of these things. I was a software engineer. I knew how to build my software, but, you know, don't ask me about the contract. Where do I even start? There's really millions of different things that you don't know how to do, and you have to do them. There is the path of you raise some money, and then you just buy the people that do stuff for you. That's also an option. I don't think it's an easy one either. It's just that that might reduce the amount of stuff that you have to learn yourself in a short time. For us, it was like this. Like, we didn't start looking for, you know, VC money or anything. We just bootstrapped it, kind of. So we had to do everything ourselves in the beginning because there was barely money. And like in 2017, there was barely money for us. No, sorry. It was actually the year after. Like until 2 years ago, we were still kind of having some daily jobs or at least part-time jobs. So until 2 years ago, we would not even be paying two salaries. So yeah, lots of things to learn to do yourself. And only recently, when we started hiring more people, we could diversify a little bit the tasks, giving them to different people. So yeah, we had to learn a lot of things.
Were you just you and Ben Googling things, or you have some business mentors, or you were looking at other people, for example, not necessarily in podcasting business, but maybe in other businesses are dealing with these situations in Germany, or you were, I don't know, calling a friend?
I think Googling is very important. Yeah, there is a lot of Googling involved still today. Even if you have the people and who can help you or mentor you, there's always situations where you just need, you know, to get information. So I think it's not a shame or something to be ashamed of, you know, to be Googling stuff just to find a way, because in the end, like, it's how you move forward, especially if you have a limited budget, of course. It depends on what time, at what phase. We had some people I would consider mentors, or now we have more people that I would consider mentors these days, like for the last year maybe. But back in the day, it was more, yeah, reading online, actually looking at other companies. That's a good point. Like, of course, first you look what is the direct competition that you have in the space and what are they doing. But we would not overdo that, because I think if you inspect your competition too much, like like if it's just, you know, this obsession, like I have to have, doesn't matter what they are building, I want to have that too, because apparently that's something that everyone should have, then you're kind of only becoming a follower and not building your kind of a vision. But looking at other companies that have similar business, like let's say we are a software as a service company, so it makes sense to look at software as a service companies in other areas to get the interesting ideas maybe, or to see how you can build your business. But that's something that came maybe a couple years ago.
For me, at least, from what I understand, what you're mentioning, it's a little bit of a learning experience. Do you remember any lessons, maybe the hard lessons along the way, or some setbacks, or maybe in quotation marks, failures that actually pushed you forward and you've learned something out of them?
Get your taxes right from the beginning.
It's a very German thing to say, you know.
Yes, I know, but it's one thing that we kind of underestimated in the beginning. So yeah, for those our listeners who are not familiar with the German way of having a business, it's like 90% is about taxes and the rest is like the rest. No, you just No, it's not that bad. But when you don't have, you know, the professional legal advice that you can afford later on, then you have to improvise in that area as well. And fortunately, we never got into a situation where it would ruin our business or where we would have problems with the tax authorities or something like that. That never happened. But it was a lot of stress. There is other things in different phases of your company that, you know, they come and go. You go through different phases and you leave one phase behind and then you go for the next phase and that's okay. But taxes, they never go away. They will follow you until you either pay them or you go to jail.
Oh, wow.
So that's like, that's, you know, yeah, it's like this. And that's why in the beginning, we didn't spend enough time thinking about taxes. We would pay taxes, but it wasn't, our accounting wasn't that professional yet. And that's something that followed us for a while. Fortunately, these days, it's not an issue anymore. And now we have actually a very good setup. We even pay taxes before they are due. So,
wow, setting example.
we managed to get out of that. That was quite an experience, yes. It was lots of hours to get everything, you know, back to working. Like there was like just a lot of accumulated stuff that we would have to fix first before we could actually move on.
But with all those challenges, you were not alone. There was also Ben, of course. You mentioned before that you both worked remotely. And I want to ask you, first of all, how this remote working looked like and whether you faced any challenges. And second of all, I would like to ask you about the characters of you two, how the cooperation looks like, what kind of people actually you are, whether you're like you feel like through all those years that Ben and Matti proved to be a good fit for a business.
Yeah, the remote work has this, of course, huge advantage. It is very flexible. You can be, for example, at home and still kind of get to get work done with someone who is sitting a few kilometers, maybe on a different continent even. So that's something that amazes me every time about remote working. Like, it's something that is not possible in many other areas still today. And like even a few years ago, it wasn't possible either. So it's something completely new actually for humanity, let's say. But to me, it was, I realized that just by having this remote setup, we could focus on a lot of things that normally I would say that there is a lot of friction going on. Like if you go for an office has a lot of advantages. That's like we have an office, but some things can be done more easily, more quickly when working remotely. We had a very solid setup from the beginning. And since we were working most of the time remotely, we would actually set up everything to be either possible to do remotely or be efficient and fast enough so that we would not have to spend, you know, hours and hours in meetings and discussing things. Of course, we would brainstorm, we would communicate, but most of the time we would just have some, you know, quick sync meetings between us. And then each of us would run in one direction and just build something. And then whenever we felt like we need to talk to the other person or show something, then we would just get back and have another session where we would discuss. So that would work pretty well. And I think actually the question, like the characters, I think that the remote work and the characters had a lot of things in common. Like, I think we are both people who can work very autonomously. We would just discuss the basics and then just do something and then get back. So that's how I think remote work can actually work.
Whoever enters the Podigy website and goes on the team section can see, instead of a normal or rather traditional bios of company employees, podcast cover arts. And there you have a cover art showing you as a Matti experience. And I have a question to you again. How would you describe this Matti experience from your perspective?
Yeah, it's how Matti is. He's basically, he's handling a lot of stuff at the same time and he's trying to do everything equally well. And I guess he's really good at that. That's how he sees himself. And that's, I guess, how the rest of the company also sees him. So he's in the background and it's enormous, which project he's involved and in how many things he has to deal with and how many interviews he gives and how many phone calls he has to take. And I'm not sure how long his day is, but it can't be just 24 hours.
Matti, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, thanks a lot for that. But I think it's not true that in all those projects I am equally, you know, doing an equally good job. I think at some point you have to accept that when you're managing a lot of things, some things just don't get enough attention and stuff like that. So I'm very, let's say, critical with myself when it comes to that, because I know that in the end, even though I try to make it something positive right now, I'm actually trying to get to, you know, at some point be able to say, okay, I'm more of in control of my work, my day, my workload especially. But it's kind of true, yeah. As a CEO, I think that's how it goes. Like, the good thing about having lots of people, I mean, at Polygy we have a lot of very talented people, really, who can also work very autonomously in general. And a lot of people who join the company actually like it because we give a lot of freedom. Of course, there's always expectations and work to be done. But even though the people are very autonomous, of course, you have to bring stuff together. There needs to be some kind of, yeah, someone who has a bit of the broader view at things. And sometimes you have to dive very deep into some topics because that's like what is needed at the moment. So in the end, it's a lot of juggling different topics at the same time. I'm pretty good at that, yeah. But it's not easy, no.
Yeah, I also want to add, not that the people become the wrong picture or the wrong impression of you. You're not that kind of control freak. You're also very good at enabling people to work independently. So that's also what you're good at. Because I used to come from a company that used to be very conservative. So where you had your strict office hours and where your boss or the person in charge always wanted to know where people are at throughout the entire day. So he was really controlling and he really got nervous if somebody left early or came late or wasn't in his office when he expected them to be. And that's totally not the case at Polygy. We're now in this remote situation. I guess that was not completely planned that way, but now after a few months, we really got used to it and it really works very well for everybody, I think. And everybody knows what he has to contribute to the company and what he's got to do, but there's no one controlling your working hours or telling you when to be available and stuff like that.
I know Ben is not with us, but his cover art, podcast cover art on the Podigy's website says running for sanity. Would you like to say a few words about how Ben is with the company and the employees?
I guess I give that to Matti because I'm not that closely working with Ben because he's on the technical side and I'm on the marketing side, which is more of Matti's responsibility. So I don't want to say anything wrong.
Yeah, it's more about like him having this huge passion about running. It's very cool because he actually runs like marathons and stuff. He's living in New York these days, so he has plenty of, you know, space to run. I think he crosses, you know, from Manhattan to Brooklyn a few times a week. I believe we all have this one way of finding a balance in our life. And for him, it's running. And I think that's actually a very good thing. I think since he started running, I feel like he has a lot of time to think, you know, while you're running and you get a lot of ideas and you kind of get away from the daily stuff. So I think it's actually a pretty positive thing.
And let me take you now to 2018 when Polygy employed its first employee, Christopher. Matti, did you need some convincing to hire a new person or was it a high time?
By convincing, you mean...
For example, you maybe thought that you still can handle everything, the two of you, or you actually needed to, for example, be convinced by Ben that, yeah, this is the time to bring someone on board. How did that look like? How did it actually feel to bring also someone new to this configuration?
I think we knew that we needed someone. Actually, that's one thing that we sometimes, when we look back, think like, okay, some things we could have done a little bit earlier. I think we were very conservative in the beginning with hiring people, probably because it's just something that was a learning as well. That's something that you normally don't do unless you are in a position to hire people. And we weren't. So I would be a team lead at other companies before, but you know, being a team lead is still very limited as of in terms of responsibility. You know, you have to go to, you know, you have some interviews, you have to choose the right candidate, but like in the end, the money still is like coming from somewhere else and being budgeted and stuff like that. And knowing that you are hiring someone to join that company that you kind of co-founded, there was just Ben and me, basically. So adding one more people, that's kind of a huge change, or like just in terms of numbers, you know, like relative to the number of people. It was a very important step. We kind of were too conservative, felt like we could handle it a little bit longer. So when we decided to hire Christopher, it was like, okay, let's try. The worst that can happen is that we have learned something and we will have to react to what's going to happen. But now when I look back, it was like, okay, of course, it's an important step, but just hiring one person, it's not that much of a risk, let's say. Because, you know, you send out a message to people and say, hey, we need help with something. And the people that apply must feel like they want this job. So it's kind of, yeah, being adults and stuff, everyone knows, okay, you applied for this job and now I see this, you know, but back in the day it was like really, oh wow, now we are responsible for this person. And also maybe that's a cultural thing, like especially when comparing Germany and Europe in general, I would say to the US, you know, hiring people is much more of a commitment, like both because it is like in terms of legal kind of a responsibility that you have, but also like of this, you know, kind of social contract that you feel. And it's actually a huge difference here having a, you know, someone freelancing, just having some, you know, working for hours, that's a completely different pair of shoes. But once you hire someone, it is kind of a big deal. But actually it's more like people think it's more of a big deal than it is in reality. Then of course you have to take care of the employee, you have to pay the taxes and everything. But once you've learned what it is, it feels like natural. But yeah, when we hired Christopher, it was a huge, huge step. Probably the biggest of all till today. The second biggest being hiring a lot of people, I guess.
Yeah. And with time, you did hire many more people. And year later, after the first employee, after Christopher came on board, you actually moved to an office space, right?
When we hired Christopher, we used to be sitting at the office of a partner company at their office, let's say. This company started more or less at the same time than we are. They had the mothership company that founded the podcast division as a company. They're called Zebra AudioNet. We've been partners in crime for a while now. And in the beginning, they offered their office space to us. They had like this one room with a table like for four people, and two of these desks were for Podigy and two were for Zebra Audio. And our first office, I don't know anymore, it was I think February 2019, next year. So that was the very first time that we moved into our own office.
Was it because you actually grew so much in numbers, or you also thought that it's time to have our own office? Because of the operations, or because we want to feel more like we're the family, we're the Podigy here?
Yeah, at that point, we didn't have to find a new office strictly because of the people, but because I think at that point we felt it's time for us to have our office. It's time for us to be independent, you know, because it was nice to start small and just, you know, sub renting a little space at someone else's office. But as soon as you kind of start thinking about your company, your goals, your priorities, you just want to have your space as well. I think this is one thing that I personally thought, like, why having an office at like our own office was important at that point is because, you know, we're starting to feel like that we need more space for our ideas, for our projects. So yeah, that's how it came to be.
No, I completely understand that. Jürgen, and you joined Podigy in February 2020. Do you remember your first impressions?
Yeah, my first impressions, they go way back. So when I started in February this year, I felt like, it was not that big of a change. So I already worked for Podigee as a freelancer, and we kept increasing my hours, and we kept increasing our commitment on both ends. So it just felt right. We talked about hiring me, I don't know, like in 2018 or even in 2017. When had we our first talk, Matti? Do you remember?
Around 2018, so more or less the time I think Christopher was hired, maybe.
Back then, it just didn't. We weren't at the right place. So I was in an employment that I was happy with, that was secure, and it was okay for me. And Podigee was not that. How do I explain that? They were just growing into being that company. So it was just. They did a really smart move by hiring Christopher first, I must say. So he came for customer service, and that was what I always felt Podigee was all about. So they really listened. I come from a place, from this independent podcasting scene, from these hobbyists that put in a lot of hours into their hobby without getting much in return, where money always comes with suspicions. When a business enters a community like that, you always are suspicious. Podigee entered this community, and I didn't have this feeling, because from my perspective, they did everything right. They listened, they built a product based on what people actually needed and wanted, and they didn't try to exploit the hobbyists or the market, or they didn't try to maximize the money they earned. So that's why it wasn't really a question for me if I should hire at Podigee or not. It was just a question of when.
And you're the head of content at Podigee today. What does your role imply?
Yeah, one thing is I love podcasting, and that's what I'm able to do now in my working hours, which is a really cool thing. And I'm basically in charge of everything that we put out in the open, every blog article that we produce, our website, every social media post we do, every podcast we produce, and also a few things that go behind the scenes, like being in touch with several companies about podcast promotion or talking about marketing stuff with other companies. So it's a pretty, pretty broad field.
We started talking about 2020, since we mentioned that Jürgen officially joined Podigee. Matti, do you remember when this year started and what the goals were for the company, and how then we had the coronavirus outbreak in March, when Germany actually went into stricter lockdown? And could you tell us a few words about those goals for this year back then, and if anything has changed?
Yeah, I mean, we started 2020 with 5 people. We are 25-ish right now. That was one of the things that we knew, that this was the year we would invest in building up the team, building up a little bit the internal structures, especially growing those internal structures. Like, and it's been quite a ride. So just from 5 to 25, that's a lot. That's only a few months between, actually. And yeah, so the goal was to grow our internal structures, be able to work on, let's say, more projects, more ideas in parallel. Also, we started, of course, hired people for entire departments that we didn't used to have by the end of last year. At the beginning of the year, for example, like Jürgen joined officially in May. He was working with us already before that. But in January, I think it was the first time that we actually officially started having a marketing team. Same with sales, same with business operations that came later. You know, new people, new teams. Now we even have an HR department. So if you want to read between the lines, you can understand what hiring HR means for a company. It means that there is going to be a lot more hiring probably next year. Especially since the coronavirus situation, we could not do anything else than, you know, focus on the business, focus on building up the product, building up the teams. I think it's not spoiling too much that we are still not finished with our growth and with our ambitions. We want to expand more internationally as well, beyond the countries that we already work on. The English-speaking world is very interesting for us as well. So there's that.
Did you see your numbers, for example, being impacted by the coronavirus outbreak? Or do you have any observations on not only on the company, but also on the industry, on podcasting in general?
Funnily, it was, I would say, manifold. The first numbers came from the US, and a lot of hosting companies observed a reduced usage. And at the same time, when we looked at our numbers, we saw growing numbers, increasing numbers. Apparently, there was a different effect on different countries. In Germany, I guess it wasn't just because of the pandemic, but what we observed is, yes, some people probably reduced their regular podcast usage because the commute time wasn't there. But then again, you know, the average commute in Germany is much shorter than in the US, for example. So that means that podcasting in Germany was not that dependent on the commute time. And we found that at the same time, there was one very successful podcast in Germany that was happening. That was the leading virologist, let's say, in the Berliner Charité, which is a very, let's say, famous hospital or health center in Germany and actually worldwide. And he started a podcast, actually the public radio station here, one of the public radio stations started it. And it was a huge success. And even Chancellor Merkel had mentioned podcasting as a way, like she has a podcast and actually she started talking about it and she mentioned podcasting as a way to reach older people maybe who are at home. So, you know, she said, I think the nephews can, you know, record a podcast and send it to. It was a bit fun because at the same time, yeah, some people were observing, yeah, that the usage was reduced. There was a huge boom. Suddenly people realized, okay, I can use podcasting to produce relatively cheaply information, you know, like I can record a podcast even if I'm stuck at home. It's very cheap. I don't need a, you know, beautiful background like on YouTube, let's say. Yeah, I think just because of this, these different factors, we saw a huge growth and a huge push in terms of new podcasts being started and more listeners. And for us, like lots of new customers as well.
If you hit up Google Trends and you limit it to Germany, you can put in podcast and then you really see the exact moment when Corona hits and the virologist starts his podcast. You really see a huge spike. It gets lower after that. So it takes like a few weeks and then it becomes a bit lower. But you can really see on Google Trends how people in Germany found podcasting. So not only the ones producing, but also the ones listening.
I also remember my habits definitely changing. When I was also living in London, I remember myself, but also a lot of my friends listening to podcasts on the commute, also going running at the gym and so on. And now I feel due to Corona and moving to Germany, I see myself turning more German, listening to podcasts more at home on the speakers. So that's a interesting fact about my changing habits.
Funnily, that's also something we can see in our numbers. We can see that, yeah, we have a huge increase in podcast listening time, but we also see that we have a percentual increase in the time people listen via web player. So not on the smartphone, not in their usual podcatcher app, but in front of the computer, on the internet, on the website.
I'm one of them. Have you changed any of the goals for 2020 or revise them in any way, Matti, for the company and maybe implement new ideas of what you would like to achieve this year? Still, we are on the edge of Q4, not really a lot of time left, but maybe something has changed, something has been added.
For sure, we had to reduce a little bit our ambitions on, let's say, an international level. Because of, you know, just basically not being able to travel too much, that's something that we had to, you know, change a little bit. So we kind of accepted, okay, this is not the time to start, you know, any major expansions or anything. And at the same time, by focusing a little bit more internally, by internally I mean like on the company and on growing, on preparing a little bit, we kind of found that that helps us finding processes or maybe even some solutions that we offer that are not ideal and we can improve. So it's kind of, yeah, I'm making the best out of the situation We moved to mainly working from home as well, same as most of the companies. We are slowly moving back to the office, let's say, very slowly. So it changed a little bit also the way we work together. Jürgen here is, for example, one of the, let's say, exceptions to the exception, because he's always working remotely. He's not Berlin-based, and I feel like he appreciates a lot that the communication has improved.
Yeah, I can remember the short time earlier that year when I was the only one working from home, or besides Ben, the only one working remotely. And that's always kind of a challenge to get all the information you need and to stay in the loop of everything. And now since everybody's at home, it's way easier on that end. So it's really going well for me.
Since we're talking about this, we are also right now working from home and recording this from homes. So just listen us a few words about the background noises. We have some kids, of course, at homes playing in the background. So hopefully you can forgive us that. About reduced travel and home working, you also, as Podigy, implemented the four-day work week idea. How is that going?
Actually, we implemented it last year, by the beginning of last year, I think, around like when we had, I think, three employees. No, sorry. Actually, with Christopher, we still started, like, let's say, with the regular work week, which in Germany at least is 40 hours. And soon after that, we started thinking about how can we become an attractive employer. I had the past experience, and I think Ben had a similar one, with working not ourselves, but with other companies that had this four-day work week. I had worked with a software agency in Zurich in Switzerland, and they had this model where every Friday they have the day off, basically. And I found it very interesting because it was so different from what you assume as an employee. And I found it like very attractive to have. I know it's like this cliche thing, but it's finding more balance between work and life in your private life, let's say. That's how this started as an idea. We kind of took it as an experiment in the beginning to see how it goes. We found that it's actually very helpful for employee satisfaction and also making us become this more attractive employer, of course. And yeah, since we've been sticking to it, I think that's one thing that is unique to us as well. I mean, unique in the sense of a thing that most companies don't have. Of course, the idea is not unique just to us. But if you compare to most of the companies that you find, especially in startup Berlin, it's not even close to, a 32-week work week or 4-day work week. We are sticking to it. We believe in it. We feel like people have, because they have this balance, they are also feeling more like part of the entire thing. When they work, they give like everything. And because they know that they can find a certain balance. I mean, Jürgen can add some of his perspective.
I can remember the weird feeling when Matti reached out to me and I was working as a full-time freelancer back then. And he reached out to me asking me to write a blog post about how they implemented the four-day work week. And maybe that was the point when I decided, that might be a good company to work for. Actually, I started freelancing because of health issues, because I didn't want to work in this strict office confinement anymore, in this strict hours, and have to be there no matter what. I couldn't really do that anymore. And that's why I started freelancing. But I ended up working a lot more, of course. So when you have to be the one responsible for earning everything, then you don't end after 40 hours. So you end maybe like after 60 or 70. And then there came this company along, and they offered a position with like half the time. That was really attractive. Yeah, actually, that was one of the main reasons I decided to join Podigy.
Well, we are bragging so much about Podigy. It's soon maybe that instead of 25 employees, you will have more, Matti.
Yeah, I mean, it has some things to take into consideration, at least, because it's in some positions, I would say. Because the bet, let's say, was like people by feeling, they have more balance, they are more flexible if they're working, they will, put more effort into the time that they are working, actually. So maybe just leaving out your typical kind of, I'm just sitting there because, you know, I have to work 40 hours. That was one thing. But of course, there's some shortcomings. Like there's some workloads, let's say, some kinds of like jobs. There's not possible to just get the same amount of work like done in a reduced work week. But that's something that you can work around easily because, like, in theory, the good thing is instead of maybe hiring two people, you can just hire three. And that has also some benefits. In most teams, we're not there yet, but we're going to grow to a bigger team. Once you get past the threshold of three people in a team, it doesn't matter actually that much because you just can, you know, even if you assume that maybe the productivity is a little bit reduced, which in most cases it's not, still you can just have, you know, the comparable amount of people just by counting as everyone as 80% of the time. So it's actually even for employers not that much of a risk. The only thing you have to manage is a little bit the expectation, maybe what is going to happen when you introduce that. But for us, it's been a really huge boost to our attractiveness as a company. So we've been able to hire a lot of people because they found it like really refreshing and an interesting idea. At least there is one person telling me about this every week, how much they love it. So I guess, yeah, it's good.
That's amazing. That's really fascinating for me also from the perspective when you look at how work habits and workplaces are changing, not only in the corona times, all the changes that had to be implemented or were forced in a way, but also like how we evaluate certain things and how the workplaces are evolving or revolutionizing sometimes in some cases their ways of doing business and functioning. We started our conversation today about how podcasting looked like in 2013, so 7 years ago. And if I can dare you to dream a little bit and think about the future, how podcasting can actually look like in 2027. Do you have any ideas what can be happening in 7 years' time in this industry?
I'm not sure if anybody can tell what happens in such a long time in such a fastly changing industry. But I feel that we haven't really reached the top yet. So there's a lot of creativity in this field and a lot of interesting formats, and it's colorful and it's loud and it's interesting. But there is so much more that this media or this channel has to offer. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that. At the same time, I think we have a bit of a lag in terms of curating content. So we have this like chart that we had since podcasting started. And there were this iTunes charts. Now it's Apple Podcasts. And this is the way where you find new podcasts. And it's really hard even now to find podcasts that are not on the charts. And there are a lot of good and interesting small indie podcasts that are really fun to listen to that you have a really hard time finding. And I think in the short future, it will be very much about curating podcasts, finding new podcasts, discovering new podcasts, recommending podcasts, or at least that's what I hope. I hope we evolve on that end a bit.
I would base my answer on some data that I saw recently. Because I think we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but there's some interesting indicators that show us at least where podcasting could be going. And I saw that, I think it was a study made in Germany that compared different audio channels. That was like digital radio, on-demand radio, podcasts, audiobooks, like different, let's say, yeah, digital audio channels, including live radio streamed on the internet. And podcasting was growing as compared to last year by around 42-45%. Second best was audiobooks, like 30%-ish. And then was radio with 20-25% maybe, which shows podcasting growing double as fast as radio, which might not be a big surprise, but at the same time, when you look at it, it means just assuming that this trend continues, like just it's enough that it continues for a couple or 3 years from now, it still means that podcasting is going to grow much faster than other digital audio channels. And that means there is still a lot of opportunity in podcasting. That means that podcasting is probably keep on its path of becoming, like, you know, one of the most important media channels out there, which is, at least in some countries, like in the US, it's I mean, if there's one country you can say it has become, you know, mass media, it's there. And it keeps growing everywhere around the world. Like, it's actually a pretty international phenomenon as well. So I know this is maybe an easy answer, but we know for sure that podcasting is still growing, you know, which means that there is going to be a lot more podcasts happening, a lot more people producing, a lot more people listening. I hope a lot interesting ideas. I hope that we are going to bring some new, fresh ideas as well very soon. We're working on that too. But I believe, like, in general, just having more usage, more people listening means more people producing, or more people producing means more people listening. But in the end, it's going to help podcasting grow as a whole and making it even more interesting.
That's amazing. For sure, we can say, I think you will all agree, that the future of podcasting seems to be bright. We will be keeping a close eye on what is happening in general, but also on this podcast. So thank you very much. Thank you to Matti, and thank you to Jürgen. Thank you for the fascinating discussion today.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.